If you gave each person in class, the 14 people in class, two touches, that was your goal. And that's less than 30 seconds of individualized time. So people think because you're taking in person, you're getting self-corrections, you're getting all this attention. Not so much. So actually, this technology would help group fitness classes give their users more data, more attention.
Hi there. Welcome to the Business Side of Fitness podcast. This is your host, Vanessa Severiano. Each week on the show, I leverage my two decades of experience in the fitness and wellness industry to have meaningful conversations with the movers and shakers behind some of the most well-known and innovative brands in our industry. This show is brought to you by Vanessa Severiano, LLC. To find out more about working with me, click the link in the show notes. And now the time has come to start the show. Everyone's got a story, and it's time to hear from this week's guest. Let's welcome to the show, Kim Morgeri. She's the co-founder and CEO of Scope, a certified athletic trainer and chiropractor whose specialties are sports medicine and pre- and postpartum care. Between her experiences teaching group fitness for over 10 years and her clinical expertise, Scope's mission is to redefine Pilates as a category and introduce it to the world in a new and exciting way. Welcome to the show, Kim.
Yay, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
I am really excited to have you here too, because we just recently connected and met at IHRSA. I thought, wow, this is such an interesting concept, because Pilates is kind of like behind the scenes. It's not really in the forefront and doesn't really get the attention that I think it deserves. So I'm really excited to dive in with you today. So why don't we just kick things off with you sharing a bit about your background and what ultimately led to you founding Scope?
Of course. So I was very active as a child. I was a competitive gymnast and cheerleader, and my mom is a chiropractor, actually still practicing out in New York. And one of her offices, she shared with a classical Pilates studio. So when I was about 13 years old, she was like, okay, Kim, time for you to get into Pilates. We need to add some stability. We need to lengthen your muscles out a little bit, because I was dealing with the constant compression of being a gymnast and tumbling. So I went into Pilates and I just fell in love. I was like 13 and I thought, this is everything I ever wanted. And I felt my core in a way I had never felt it before. And I fell in love with it from there. And then I started seeing between her treatment and consistent Pilates, I was never really injured. Of course, I had like the acute injuries, but I never had really the chronic overuse injuries that a lot of my friends were having, which she pointed out to me, of course. Like, I was 13, I wasn't looking into injury prevention at that time, but my mom really pointed that out to me. And then from there, I just always loved sports medicine, kind of like her. I knew I wanted to do some type of sports medicine, but wasn't sure what realm. So looking into undergrad, I looked into athletic training, and I thought athletic training was great because it's the only medical professional that sees an athlete before they're injured, while they're injured, and then deals with their return to play protocol. So you get a very large scope of the sports and medicine side of a, now when I was at Ohio State, D1 level athlete. So that was a really, really good experience working with the teams there and seeing kind of what they were doing, what rehab tools they were using, what medical professionals were surrounding them. And then from there, I went to chiropractic school because I thought, you know, this was a missing piece to even Ohio State's athletic training team. And I just loved it. You know, it's like a very holistic, natural approach. They really look at the source of an injury, more of like a mechanics from start to end, which I really enjoyed. So from Ohio State, specialized in athletic training, went to chiropractic school, where once again, focused on sports medicine. And then I kind of dove into the pre and postpartum world. And that happened from my soon-to-be sister-in-law having a baby about a little over five years ago. And she's like 90 pounds. She had a big baby. She's the fittest person I know. And after she had her first child, she was like, this wrecked me. Like, no one is here to help me. I'm going to group fitness classes and I don't even know what I'm doing. It's not feeling like it used to feel. I need you to figure this out for me. So that was my introduction into the pre and postpartum world. And then from there, I opened my own practice. I increased my patient base and I always used Pilates as a rehab tool for these injuries, whether it was a sports injury, a professional athlete, a weekend warrior, a new mom, I was always using Pilates as my rehab tool and I loved it. So that kind of led to Scope. It was pre-COVID. My girlfriend was like, her and her husband, who's in manufacturing, who's now my co-founder, were trying to make their own reformer because the reformers were 10 to 12 grand. And they're like, they're really expensive for our clients and renting studio space is super hard because the only lull is between 1 and 4 p.m. and who can only have privates between 1 and 4 p.m. So we set out to create our own machine. And from there, the rest is history.
Very cool. And so what about the technology that goes into the machine? Because it's not just a reformer. There's a whole tech component to that. And how did you come up with that idea?
For sure. So from the very beginning, when we set out to create Scope, we thought, what will make us unique? We thought anyone can put a screen on a machine. Like Peloton was a thing, but it wasn't a huge thing. But we knew what it was. Me being from the East Coast, I actually took classes at Peloton's live studio, so I was familiar. But we thought, we don't just want a screen on a machine. How can we make ourselves different? So then we started thinking about what's important to us. And we decided that it's not power. We always thought, we don't care how hard someone's working, if they're number one on the leaderboard, if they're not working correctly. I would have patients come into my office who are PRing every single class, but in excruciating back pain. And we thought, there's no checks and balances for you at home for form. No one's telling you if you're doing it right, if you're moving correctly, if your form is off. Everyone's just being rewarded for how hard they're working. So our technology in the machine from day one focused on form. We always thought, we want to be a company that's known for form, correct biomechanics, injury prevention, increased longevity, and really answering the number one question at home to the user being, am I doing this right? And if I'm not doing this right, how can I self-correct at home without an instructor right by my side? So all the technology in the machine tells you in real time, are you doing it correctly? Tells you how to correct in real time. And then we'll get into the scoring system, I'm sure. But then you actually get graded based on that.
Do you think people really care? Like, does the end user value the form correction or the form score? That's kind of my bone with group, you know, that I pick with group fitness. Because I feel like you're right. People are just measuring outputs. They're trying to finish first. They're trying to, you know, outdo other people in the class. And it's like a competition. But I don't know if the end user really cares about form. I think they care about when they're injured. But do they connect those dots between form and injury?
That's a great question and a great point. And what I found is, there's definitely a wave of change happening in fitness. And I talk with people about this all the time, that in the 80s and early 90s, it was very, how hard can I work? Can I push myself to the brink in every single workout? And every workout needs to be a 10 out of 10. We're in this new wave where people are thinking about, what is my recovery like? How do I prevent injury? What is the word functional training? Like, functional training was never a thing a long time ago. Now it's kind of at the forefront of fitness. It's like, how do I move better to increase my daily life quality, right? People are thinking, how do I be able to play with my kids? How do I be able to play with my grandkids? That all stems back to form, and also connecting the dots between form and injury. The age of injury is much, much lower in today's day and age than it was. And there's multiple reasons for that. But it used to be, I believe, the average age of like low back pain was high 30s, mid 40s, if not higher. And now it's in the teens. So you're seeing teenagers with low back disc injuries, which you never used to see back in the day. The age for injury has really, really decreased. So form has to come at the forefront. If it's not in someone's, you know, immediate view, it will be in their immediate view. And as people get injured and as people start feeling these types of pains and realizing they shouldn't feel in pain, it's not, let's work through the pain. I've been in pain my entire life. Pain is normal. The narrative is changing to, pain is not normal. I need to do something about this and I need to give it attention before it really affects me for the rest of my life. So I think form should be and is becoming the forefront of movement.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think that as like the average age of like a fitness consumer or fitness enthusiast gets, you know, might be going up and up, as like those of us that are in the aging population kind of grew up going to a gym, whereas perhaps our parents did not have that luxury. It wasn't as commonplace. And so now, like as a person in my 40s, like my goals of when, you know, when I first started working out is like, hey, I just don't want to, I want to be like mobile mm-hmm. and I want to feel good in my body. And pain is a huge, I mean, when I think of the pain industry and how many pain clinics there are and how many different medications there are addressing pain, this is a non-invasive way to address pain. So I definitely can see how that's a huge problem that you're solving with Scope. And then Kim, how are you planning to roll Scope out? I know that you're kind of in the beginning stages. Like, are you going direct to consumer? Are you going a B2B model? What is the plan there?
For sure. So I think this is something that makes us unique as well. We're actually going to start B2B. So we launched a D2C pre-sale for interest a few weeks ago, but we're actually going to launch B2B, and that's for a few reasons. One is we're not just a connected fitness platform. I consider us a data analytic Pilates tool first and a connected fitness platform second. And that's because all the data that we're getting from our form capturing technology can actually be used in many different ways. And one is rehab. So rolling this out to wellness centers, recovery centers, physical therapy offices first, and even some were in talks with some commercial studios because they would be able to not use our content, but to be able to see the data captured in real time. So as an instructor is teaching their content, the users would be able to see more so where they're at to make self-corrections. Because in group fitness, you know, and I taught group fitness for a long time, it was your goal is to give each person two touches. And that was your goal in teaching. Like if you gave each person in class, the 14 people in class, two touches, that was your goal. And that's less than 30 seconds of individualized time. So people think because you're taking in person, you're getting self-corrections, you're getting all this attention. Not so much. So actually this technology would help group fitness classes give their users more data, more attention in a safer way. So B2B model in that sense, and our software for that is ready much sooner than the consumer side, but then we will be D2C as well, sooner rather than later too.
I love that because I feel like, you know, there has always been like group fitness inside the boutique, you know, inside the big box gyms, right? Then yeah. We came across the boutique fitness, you know, I guess, I don't know, movement, right? And then there's personal training or personalized one-on-one sessions. And I feel like the sliding scale from boutique fitness and group fitness is moving closer and closer to the value of one-on-one training without necessarily, you know, that cost and that higher price point. So it's, you know, more, I guess it's kind of like democratizing fitness in a way. And so how does it work if somebody is teaching a group fitness, you know, just break it down for me with a little bit more detail there. So if I'm teaching a group fitness class and I'm using Scope technology and I'm able to get the real-time feedback, is it that the individual is getting the real-time feedback and they're making the adjustments, they're not waiting for the instructor, or is it a tool for the instructor to say, hey, person on reformer number 6 really needs some corrections?
Absolutely. So it's a tool for the user. The user will be able to see their data in real time and self-correct. So basically, the easiest way to describe it is if the instructor calls out, okay, Vanessa, I want you to meet me in this move, and I want you to see X, Y, and Z, or a group, not individual, group class, meet me in this move, and you should be X, Y, and Z. The user will be able to see where they are between the X, Y, and Z, and then they'll be able to self-correct. And if they can't self-correct, the instructor can also see that data and then make individualized corrections. So it's for both, but the user primarily and the instructor secondarily. But overall, it increases the efficiency and the effectiveness of the workout.
And how is this being received from your B2B pitches? Are people excited about this? Are they hesitant about it? Because I find that some of us in the fitness industry, unfortunately, we can be a little hesitant towards change. But I think after the last couple of years, we all know that we need to embrace change. So how is that being received?
Absolutely. So B2B is actually being received way better than I expected. I thought that these studios and these other centers that I'm speaking to would be like, no, this is the way, even PT clinics, this is the way we've done it. I have my reformer. It's not our main tool. and I use it sometimes. I don't, why would I need a new one? Like, these were the things I was ready to answer, but people are ready. A lot of people, the feedback I'm getting, they're saying every other sector of fitness has become smart. Everyone is measuring data. Everyone has analytics except Pilates. Everyone's like, what are we doing? What are we waiting for? Why are we not advancing with everyone else? People are waiting for this. And in the brick and mortar studios, a lot of the feedback I'm also getting is, what will make us unique? You know, like, studios want something that makes them unique, that draws clients to them. And this would really make them unique. So it's actually being really well received. And we've just kind of started diving into this a little bit, but the reception has been way better than I anticipated. And even in the medical community, like in rehab centers and PT offices, there's not a lot of ways to like quantifiably measure progressive data. There's range of motion, there's a couple other metrics, but there's nothing like what we've developed, unless you're in a biomechanics lab, which most PT offices obviously don't have access to a biomechanics lab. So they're like, this would be fantastic because you can actually track a patient's measurable progress, which is huge. You can plan their programming better. You can get them back to their activity sooner. There's lots of advantages from a working out perspective, from a medical perspective, from a health perspective, using this tool.
Why do you think the Pilates world has been lagging in advancement?
You know, I'm not sure. The answer that comes to mind is it's hard. Like, it's not just a stationary bike where someone is sitting there the whole time and you're measuring two or three different things. It's not just like RPMs. It's not speed. In Pilates, there's so many different changes. You're lying down, you're sitting up, you're kneeling, you're on your stomach, you're on your back, you're facing one way, you're facing the other way. Like, to just add in motion capture, there's some companies that are doing that who I've spoken with, and it's very difficult because they're like, your body's not in the screen view the entire time. Like, you're not just on one level. You're not just standing, squatting, where they can measure, you know, reps from height changes and joint positions. Like, you're changing moves 50 to 60 times a class and you're all over the place. It's very hard to actually measure a Pilates class versus other types of fitness activities like rowing. Rowing, you're very stationary. Biking, you're very stationary. Pilates, you are exceptionally dynamic. So I think it's a little challenging, and I don't know why no one has added to it yet. Now I think it's going to start happening a little bit more.
I feel like Pilates is the most undervalued modality out there. It's so amazing, and it really helps you do everything so much better. And it really, I mean, you're focusing on your core. That's like your main stabilizer that protects like everything. And when you're talking about people having injuries and the age going like lower and lower with lower back pain, it's because like sedentary lifestyles, and Pilates is a great solution for that. So it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Pilates is truly my favorite modality of exercise just because I can turn it into anything. And that's what I like about it. I have, you know, borderline professional golfers. I have older clients who you may not be able to sit or stand, and we're trying to keep bone density mass up. I have very athletic people, professional athletes, like prepartum, postpartum. I could make Pilates into a modality for any population member at any point of their life, which is what I like about it. And it can be used as a tool to set a good foundation for any activity. Like, someone I treat is a professional boxer, and he was like, no way. Like, his workouts are 4 or 5 hours a day. He's like, there's nothing you can make me do on here that I can't do. Like, he's the most athletic person I think I've ever seen. He's just like, but he's in excruciating neck pain. Both rotator cuffs are torn. Like, there's so many levels that he plays through and works through. And I'm like, no, let me just get you on a machine. And he's thriving. And he's like, I never thought Pilates as a foundation, learning how to keep control, how to add stability, how to feel the muscles I'm supposed to feel. He never thought that could translate into his activity. And that's what I love about Pilates, is it translates into any activity to give you a more stable base and a really good foundation for whatever your goals are.
And I feel like it's also very humbling. Like you could be really good in one modality and then you get on a reformer and you're like quivering and it's very extremely humbling. But Kim, I'd love to learn more about the patent pending score system. How exactly does it work? Is it real-time feedback or are you just getting a score afterwards? How does that work?
Absolutely. So our brilliant engineer developed our score system feedback, and we were lucky that we actually started this project pre-COVID. So a lot of our patents date back to before COVID, which I think is going to be, from a company stance, very advantageous for us. So how the scoring system works is in real time, you're getting this data feedback, but there's a gold standard of data. So you're being compared to the gold standard of data every single second you're in this class or taking the content. All this data is being fed into your score. So you get a score 1 through 100 at the end of class. And how we're using the scores, it becomes like a great talking point and a great progress point. So if you're like, okay, I took Kim's advanced class, my average score is an 87, I scored a 72. Maybe I need to recover more. Maybe I need a recovery class, or that was really, really hard. It was just really challenging for me. Your friend could be like, oh, that was my best class ever. I scored a 99. Like, it's a great talking point between you and a friend to take the same class together and talk about it after. And then from a more progress standpoint, after the score, you get a performance breakdown of that score. So you see every single move you did with all of our data points and how it amounted to that score. Once again, so you can track your progress and be like, oh, wow, my left lunge and my right lunge, there's a 20-point difference there. Like, why is there a 20-point difference there? What do I need to work on? So it really gives you a lot of feedback and a look into you anatomically to look at asymmetries or things you can look on, and even injury prevention. Like, my planking series is a mess. I'm like really heavy in one part of my body. I need to work on that. Maybe that's why I have shoulder pain. So there's so many things you can do with that from a scoring system. Then, of course, we use all that data to then give recommendations to our users. Did they rank it? Was it hard? Was it easy? Did it feel challenging? Did you feel pain? And then we can better use that data to give you, okay, let's try this class. Let's do this class. Let's do this 10-week low back program. In every single class, you're telling us you have low back pain. Like, let's move away from just generalized group and let's get into like our 10-week low back pain program. So a lot that's used in this patent pending data and scoring system.
Okay, so when you have an idea, right, and you have the concept and then you actually take it to execution, a lot of things can change, right? And you're learning as you go. So what's changed in your business, your prototype, since, you know, the idea that first seed was planted to where Scope is today?
So when we first started this, you know, I didn't even know if any of this data could be measured. Like, I remember bringing in my friend who was an engineer. And at this point, I just thought, like, which is really, really embarrassing for me to say, I thought all engineers were the same. And I brought him in. And I was like, this is what we want to do. And he was like, can I engineer furniture? Like, what are you talking about? And I was like, oh, okay. So you just drove from downtown LA to Manhattan Beach and all that traffic for no reason. We should have discussed this previous. But then I did talk to the right engineer, and he's the most brilliant person ever. And I was like, this is what we want to do. And he's like, well, I don't know if it's ever been done before. In a weekend, he was like, okay, I think I figured it out. I think it can be done. And I was like, great. Now we're off to the races. So we started off thinking like, is this even possible? And then we moved it. And that was one component of it. Another component of it, my co-founder actually was like, we can do this, because he builds construction machinery. And he was like, this is something we measure in my scope of work. So he was like, to transition this into a Pilates machine, he said, would be very simple. So that piece, we were always like, okay, that's doable. But then as we got into other pieces, we were like, is this? But then we found out it was. But where it's actually gone from there was, I didn't even realize the level of detail we could measure. And I think that has been exceptional for me to learn. Like, we're working with Sweatworks, which a lot of people know of, and the engineers we're working with there, wild. So they were like, not only can we measure this, we can actually measure left to right side, which is, I didn't even know would be possible. And I think it's going to be exceptional. So what I think I was most surprised with was just everything takes a long time. You're like, I want it to be done today. And things I didn't realize how much testing went into it. So that was a learning curveball, but obviously for the best. We want it to be tested before users are using it.
Right. You want to make sure that it's accurate. And you're right. Pilates is so dynamic because in some moves you're laying down, some moves you're standing up, you know, next to the reformer. So there is like a huge scope of what they're having to measure. No play on words there, but yeah, I was going to ask you, where do you come up with the name? But I think I figured it out. And so Kim, how are you funding Scope? Are you bootstrapping? Are you planning on raising? What's going on there?
So we bootstrapped, there were six of us early on who bootstrapped. And then from them, we raised a small pre-seed round. And that was between two friends and family and one family fund. And now we are heading into a raise right now. We opened last week. So we're getting really excited. We have a really, you know, good plan for where we want to take this. And everyone says it's the best time to fundraise right now. So we said, why not? It's a joke, obviously. Everyone's like, this is not the best time, but here we are.
I mean, I feel like there's no time that's going to be perfect. And when you have the right piece, there's always the right investor out there. Do you think as a female founder, I guess, would you be a female founder in fitness or fitness tech, right? Do you think that you faced any challenges that perhaps like a male co-founder or a male counterpart would not have faced?
Absolutely. So I think part of that was self-inflicted. And then part of that is the industry. And the self-inflicted part was I really felt a little insecure in myself for taking that role. And that's because I've always been very highly educated in what I was doing. You know, like I went through so much grad school. I specialized very, very early. So I was very confident when I walked into a room to be like, I deserve a seat at the table here. I have so much experience, education, and I'm confident in that. When I took on this role, you know, I never went to business school. That was a huge insecurity I had to work through, where I was talking to these people and they're like, what business school did you go to? Did you go to Harvard? And I was like, oh, well, nope, didn't go to Harvard, didn't go to business school. And I really felt like early on when I was pitching, that was a lot of the feedback I was getting. Someone said to me, like, you need a male co-founder. Like, and I had a male co-founder. And I was like, well, I do have a male co-founder. They're like, great. And I was like, they didn't ask me anything about what he did, but just the fact I had a male co-founder, it kind of checked that box for them. And that to me, it was a red flag. This was like one of the first pitches I ever did. But I was like, I didn't love that, to be honest. So I think part of it was self-inflicted, just gaining the confidence, which I now have. And that's taken me a little bit of time just to realize, no, I didn't go to business school. But I think I bring a very unique perspective to what we're building. And that allows me to have a seat at the table, rightfully so. So I've gained confidence in the, you know, self-assured part. And then also just, yeah, people want you to have a co-founder. They like if it's male. That's just my personal experience. I don't know if that's exactly the landscape, but that's definitely been my experience in it.
That's interesting. I mean, I've heard that from several female founders, and I'm not sure exactly why. You know, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of layers and different VCs or different people have their different reasoning for that, but that's just interesting to highlight. So what's your plan, Kim, with growing Scope and the big picture that you have in mind? Are you planning on taking this and then developing studios with the Scope reformer? Like, where do you see this headed?
Yeah. So the original plan was to start B2B in physical therapy, wellness centers, places like that, and then build the B2B to big box gyms, commercial studios, and beyond. And then really hone in on the D2C platform. I always thought my original plan was, you know, we're going to go right to D2C. We're going to have a live studio. We're going to film this live studio. We'll open up a few other brick and mortars. And we're actually, like I said, getting so much interest from commercial spaces early on that that's definitely something we're going to have to explore. And that is changing the plan a little bit, that maybe they're not our commercial studios. They may be, you know, other people's commercial studios, but that's something we are definitely exploring right now. But from a growth perspective, definitely starting B2B, moving to D2C, and then beyond. Like every hotel I go to be quite honest with you, I'm like, let's get scope in here. Like, I need a reformer when I travel. It's really hard to find Pilates classes when you travel. Like, we go to Maui a lot. There's one studio in Maui. They're sold out every single time I go. I have to book a month in advance. The classes are 10 minutes less time than I'm used to, and it's like $40 a class. So just being able to have these at hotels is also a major plan for me, because it's really hard to get Pilates in when you travel, and my body like craves it if I take time off, which I'm sure others can relate to. I hear that a lot, that it's hard to replicate when you travel. Like, it's really hard to replicate the movements of reformer Pilates with the resistance. So getting them everywhere, scope should be everywhere.
What's the biggest difference between reformer and mat Pilates? Obviously the equipment, but why is it so essential to use the reformer?
For sure. You can do mat Pilates, and there's definitely benefit for mat Pilates, like 100%, but it's not reformer. You're not getting resistance. You know, the springs on a reformer are resistance. You're pulling or pushing weight the entire time. The mat Pilates, it's straight body weight. So there's a lot of ab moves actually you can't replicate. I would say that's the hardest part to replicate, is the core series on mat versus reformer.
How has the prototype, the original prototype for scope, changed to what we're seeing in the marketplace coming out soon?
Night and day. Like, I can't even explain the differences. The first prototype we ever made, we took a Pilates machine that I found on Craigslist, and we added our tech to it. And we said, you know, we were testing out, will this technology even work? That was when we were kind of like unsure. Technology worked, huge accomplishment. From there, we redesigned an entire machine from scratch. I thought this would be the machine we would go to market with. I was like, this looks good to me. It's the height of COVID. We need content. Let's go to market. And as a team, we were like, let's not go to market. Let's put our best foot forward when the tech works in the machine. Because we could have gone to market with just the machine and the screen and the content a long time ago, but we wanted the technology and all of that data to be working as our best foot forward, which is a good idea. This new model that you'll be seeing, it's a complete redesign. It's absolutely stunning. I think this is, you'll be able to see if you look at our Instagram, like the early photos is the black machine. That was the second prototype. And the newer photos is the white machine. That's what will be going to market. But this machine, the biggest differentiator about this is it compacts. I think we're the first Pilates reformer to ever compact. And there's a lot of dead space where the carriage moves up and down. And when that dead space isn't being used, it would just sit there. So you have your reformer that's between 90 and 110 inches. And I was thinking, a lot of my girlfriends I was speaking to in New York, even if there's someone who loves Pilates, they're like, this machine is for them. They're like, Kim, under my bed is storage. My ceilings are not 10 feet high. Where do you plan on me putting this? And I was like, oh, okay. We need to compact it. I get it. It's smaller than a treadmill and it folds down when it is compactable. So when you're not using it, it's like an ottoman, which is fantastic. And I think, yeah, we're the first ever to do that.
That's a perfect example of being an agile founder and hearing something, you know, a problem and solving it. So I think we've all heard, you know, the saying that content is king, right? And there are so many connected fitness companies out there that are creating a ton of content, and some of them choose to go the route of making their instructors kind of rock stars. Other brands go other ways. What's your content strategy for Scope?
So content, I do think, is king. Like, a lot of people think different. You know, there's so many different, which, you know, opinions about this. I think content is king. When I walk into a studio, the instructor is everything to me. Like, if I like the instructor, if the instructor challenges me, I will go to them. If you look at a lot of brick and mortar studios, you can see who the popular instructors are because they're all waitlisted. And you're like, when I travel, I'm like, oh, waitlisted. When else are they teaching? Like, that's kind of how I decide when I travel whose classes I go to. And that may be a little controversial, but that's just what I've done, because I'm like, if they're very popular, I get it. But with that being said, I do think every instructor offers something different to everyone. And even the instructors I don't take, I'm like, they are very beneficial for the people in their classes and they love them. So it's not to say they're bad. I just think there's a right fit for everyone. And that's why I love Connected Fitness, because you can make these instructors available at the time people can take them. Like, if I don't love the instructor at 6 a.m. is the only time I can take class, that's who I'm taking. Do I love the experience? No. Would it be nice if I can choose my favorite instructor at 6 a.m., not waitlisted a month in advance? Amazing. So I think content is king. Being an instructor for so long, I do love what Peloton did for their instructors. I think there's so much power behind making the instructors valuable and showing appreciation for them. I think that's an amazing thing that they did. Instructors are very underpaid and undervalued, as we can see in some lawsuits happening in present day and some gyms. Like, instructors are ready to be appreciated, and the foundation of Scope being built by people who've taught Genevieve and I for years and years and years, like, we want to value our instructors. And instructors, there should be content for everyone. Very inclusive, very meeting every single client where they're at. That's really, really important to us.
What about you? Like, you're Dr. Kim, right? the clinician, and then you're an entrepreneur. Like, how do you balance, you know, your career aspirations, what you want, with everything that you have going on? Because I'm sure seeing patients and, you know, founding a tech company, I mean, there's just so much going on. Where do you see things headed for yourself and your career personally?
Yeah, I've definitely taken a seat back in seeing patients. The patients that I see are really like R&D. Like, Pilates is involved in almost every patient, and it keeps my mind fresh for, you know, when a patient comes in, what they're telling me, what their goals are, what their injuries are, how they got their injuries. Like, I keep a pulse on fitness. You know, if there's like a studio a lot of people are coming from injured, I'm like, what's going on? Let me look into that. And how can I make that better in our content? You know, like, how are people getting injured in group fitness? How can I make sure that doesn't happen? And what activities do they want to get back to? Like, I see a lot of golfers. We'll definitely have like a golfing program on Scope, which I think makes us unique. And that is from my clinical background that we're able to do that. But I've definitely taken a backseat to seeing patients just from a time restraint. Scope is more than a full-time position at this point, and one that I'm thoroughly enjoying. So, you know, just balancing it for right now. I would say, I don't know. I would say how anyone's balancing it. I try to check in with myself. I try to make sure I'm consistently working out, but I love it. When you're doing something that you're really enjoying, the time just like flies by, to be honest.
If you ever discover how to balance things, let me know. That's another business that you can develop, because I feel like we're all figuring that out, right? And it's like, it's so funny. Even during IRSA, I was chatting with some friends and I'm like, I just don't feel like I have it balanced or figured out. And they're like, guess what? Everybody's figuring it out. And that's so true. So Kim, it's been such a pleasure to chat with you and learn more about Scope. If somebody wants to connect with you, they want to learn about getting one of these reformers or perhaps working together, how can they do that?
Email, and I run our Scope's Instagram, my own Instagram, any form of contact. I answer everything. I love connecting with anyone. People reach out with questions and comments all the time, and I love hearing people's feedback. So any way of communication, let me know. I'm open.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Kim.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. This is your host, Vanessa Severiano. Thanks for tuning into this episode. If it brought you value, please subscribe, review, and share the Business Side of Fitness podcast. If you'd like to learn more about working with me, please click the link in the show notes. Thanks again for listening, and I'll catch you on the next episode.